Morning. Today's daf nidos nun aleph or nun amud beis. We're halfway down the amud, starting this morning with the words tanu rabbanan. We are in the sixth parak of nida, which means that we are a little bit off topic in terms of mesecht nida. We are going to come back to that in a couple days from now, less than a couple days from now. But in the meantime, however, in this detour that we took, so it was prompted by the first mishnah of the sixth parak of our mesecht. We're going back to mem chesamud aleph. On Mem Chesam and Alf, we talked about Simonim of Anisha, and how do we know? What are the signs that tell us that she moves from being a Kitana to being a Nara? So there was a Simon Tachton, there was a Simon Elyon. And according to the Chachamim of that Mishnah, the only way that there's going to be a Simon Elyon is only if there's already a Simon Tachton. Simon Tachton always precedes Simon Elyon. And with that piece of information, so there's a very easy way to tell whether a woman has arrived at the stage of being a Nara. Rav Meir disagreed, but okay, that was the first Mishnah. From there, so there are two simanim, and so from there, the Mishnah launched into a wonderful detour. The Mishnayos launched into a wonderful detour regarding things that have, quote-unquote, two simanim. Not exactly simanim, but what I've been describing the last number of days, two factors. So we talked about Kli Cheres and the hole in the Kli Cheres. We talked about an aver, an additional appendage to the hand or to the foot. Whether or not that is considered part of the mace. We talked about Tumas Medrash versus Tumas Ohel, and the kalim that are susceptible to Tumas Medrash and Tumas Ohel. We have spoken about being a judge, adjudicating a civil case and adjudicating a capital case. We talked about being a judge and being a witness. We have spoken about Maisros and Tumas Ochlin. So there were many, many different areas where we discussed this question of whether it has, when something has two factors, what's the primary factor, what's the secondary factor, which one can exist without the other, etc., etc. In along that lines, so we have now been discussing for a little bit of time now Tumas Ochlin. The Gemara started the discussion yesterday. Let's pick it up right where we left off yesterday with the words Tanu Rabbanan. Just a couple of brief reminders before we go with the Gemara. So in terms of nevela of an animal gives off tumma. In other words, an animal dies without a shechita. So that animal now is deemed a nevela. It's an avatumma. It's a source of tumma. It's going to be metame b'magov amasa. Either you touch it or you carry it, a kezias of it, and you're going to become tame. That is tumas nevela. When it comes to a bird, if it's a kosher bird, and it's a nevela, meaning it didn't receive a proper shechita, so then that bird is also going to be an avatama, but transmitted through a very unusual manner. Not maga, not masa, certainly not ohel, but the only way it's going to transmit tuma is only through beis ablia. You consume a kezias of the bird, and you put a kezias of its meat into your throat, so then you contract the tumma from the bird. And that's the only way that this tumma is going to be transmitted from a bird. This is discussed extensively in the beginning of the Mishnayos of Taharos that we quoted already yesterday, the first Mishnah from Taharos. There are 13 unique features regarding this particular halacha. And so we quoted one of them yesterday regarding the idea of machshava. Does it require machshava? Which we're going to come back to in just a moment. So anyway, so that's the topics that we've been discussing. Tumas nevela, nevelas animal, nevelas behema, and nevelas of tahor. Okay, we're going to pick it up now. We're starting halfway down the Amatan Rabbanan with the Braisa. Gozel, so I have a pigeon. Pigeon over here is a kosher bird. Shenafalagas, and what it did is it fell into the press. And so it died. So, v'chishav alav la'alosa l'kusi. And so now as follows. There's a machshava. Meaning, so the bird did not receive a shechita, so you and I can't eat the bird. But we think to ourselves, you know what? Okay, so we'll give it to the kusi, and the kusi will enjoy eating this bird. So once we have that machshav in mind, so now it's going to be tame. It's going to be tame. What does that mean? It's going to be tame. So as Rashi points out over here, the Rashi, take a look towards the bottom, before the lines start getting wide, about five lines from there, tame, Tumas Ochlin. So Rashi says, we're describing over here Tumas Ochlin. Now, let's be clear. When we're talking about a nevela, nevela is an avatama. Now, the nevela of an animal is an avatama effective immediately, meaning that when it comes to an animal, so once it dies, so now the meat of the animal itself now is an avatama. It doesn't require heksher, it doesn't require machshava, meaning it just by definition, by virtue of the fact that it died, so the meat of that animal, the flesh of that animal is an avatama. Okay. Also, on top of that, there's another kind of tumah to take into consideration, which is tumas ochlin. Now, when it comes to nevela, it's kind of like it's an afterthought, because why don't we even have to consider tumas ochlin? If the meat of this animal is already going to be an avatumah, it's a source of tumah. Tumas ochlin, what's tumas ochlin? Tumas ochlin just simply means it's a food, it's an edible food, so it is now susceptible to become tummy. But when it comes to nevela, why don't we even have to take that into consideration? It is overshadowed by the fact that it's already an avatumah. Okay, that's normally true. But as we're going to see, I'll show you Rashi a little bit later on this morning, as we're going to see, there are occasions where the carcass of an animal, the meat of the animal, even though it died without a shechita, and even though it's a nevela, there are going to be times where it doesn't give off tumas nevela. A simple example, Rashi says it later, let's say you don't have a shear. It's less than a kazayas. So under those circumstances now, it's no longer a tumah mitam tumas nevela. Okay, is it a food? Well, it's an interesting question, because you and I are not allowed to eat it. It's a nevela. It's prohibited for us to eat. On the other hand, it is edible, and you and I aren't going to eat it, but we can give it to a guy to eat. So is it a food? The answer is yeah, it's a food. It just happens to be that you and I can't consume it, but that's for our halachic considerations. But it is a food. All foods are subject to tumas ochlin, which means that it can become subject to becoming tamei, and under certain circumstances, it can pass the tumah along to another food. Fine. With all that stated, now let's come back to our bird. Our bird over here fell into a gas, it fell into some sort of a press. It died. And the Mishnah is telling us, this is Mishnah Taharos, by the way, that if we are now having a machshava that we're going to give it to a kusi, so now it's going to become tamei. And Rashi writes, I'm reading the Rashi inside, tumas ochlin umetamei ochlin acherim b'magam. So now, because of this machshava that we had, this bird is going to be given to a guy, so therefore it is going to become tamei, meaning tumas ochlin, and it could transmit the tumah to another food. Now, how did it become tamei? And Rashi writes over here, it's really interesting. Rashi writes, "Ometame ochlim achirim b'maga de me'atzmo ba'alav tuma mishechishev alav." How did it become tame? It became tame from itself. Meaning, consider that this bird is an av hatuma. Now, I understand this is where it gets a little bit tricky. How does the bird transmit its av hatuma? By ingestion. So it's a little bit unusual now that because the bird is A, an av hatuma, and B, we're going to give it to a guy, so therefore it's tumas ochlin. So how did the meat of this bird become tameh? From itself. Even though normally the transmission of the tumah is done through an achila. That part's strange. I'm admitting it. But nevertheless, Rashi writes that. So we know that it's a source of tumah. We know that when a person ingests it, he's going to become tameh. So it's an av tumah. So le'inyan tumakala nami lo bay hechsher mayim v'lo hechsher negir sheretz. So therefore, as far as tumas ochlin is concerned, once we put it under the category of ochlin, so now it's going to become tamei from itself. It doesn't need contact into liquid. It doesn't need to come into contact with the sheretz. So hechsher hainu davar shemachshir l'tumah kigon sheretz mayim. Hechsher over just simply means in this context, hechsher is even a broader term. Doesn't need to come into contact with liquid. Doesn't need to come into contact with another sheretz. No. Does not need machshava. Does not need machshava. It is, the Torah is only says that it is passes on the tumah only through the Beis Ablia. That's true, but okay, fine. Rashi says it right. It's very clear that it's metame ochlin, and it not only is it metame ochlin, it's metame itself. Okay, because it's a avatoma, and now that it's established as ochlin, it's metame itself. Okay, so let's go back to the Mishnah. Let's reread the Mishnah again. Gozo shenafal legas v'chishav ala lalos l'kusei. So once we decide that we're going to give it to a non-Jew, tame. So then it is going to be tame, and again, tame over here means tumas ochlin. Lekelev, however, if let's say after we take the bird out of the gas and we look at it and we're thinking to ourselves, disgusting, you know what? I'm not going to give it to a kusi. We'll give it to a dog. Now, even though obviously the dog's going to enjoy it, that is not considered ochlin in terms of tumas ochlin. Animal food is not given the status of tumas ochlin. Therefore, tahor. So therefore, it'd be tahor. That is the position of the Tanakhama. The Mishnah continues.
So all has to do with makshava?
No.
No makshava?
No. Hmm?
Because you have the makshava of giving it for dog food.
As far as Tumas Ochlin is concerned, that's correct. Right. Meaning it, in an ambiguous state of whether we're going to consume it or not consume it. On an item that may or may not be consumable, so yes. So the Mishnah is telling us that makshava becomes critical. Now Rav Yochanan Nuri Amar Afla Kelev Tamei. Now Rav Yochanan Nuri says, look, you're going to give it to a dog? And as Rashi points out over here, and even if I'm not going to give it to a dog, right, it's food. Rashi writes on the bottom, right, Afla Kelev Tamei, Tumas Ochlin V'lav Mishum De Achilas Kelev Machshavahi. It's not because we're going to give it to a dog. Ela L'Rav Yochanan Nuri Lo Bay Machshava. Rav Yochanan Nuri says, look, just as an objective statement, it is a food, and therefore it doesn't require machshava. Good. That's Rav Yochanan Nuri. And now the Gemara is going to give an argument on behalf of Rav Yochanan Nuri, or he's going to give an argument. I'm Rav Yochanan Ben Nuri, Kavachomer. And the argument of Rav Yochanan Nuri is, look, as far as it becoming an avatama, there's no machshava required for avatama, meaning the bird, the carcass of a dead bird, as long as it was a kosher type, is going to be an avatama, period. No machshava is needed. It's just a reality of tumma. So over here, we're deliberating for tumma kala, for tumas ochlin, whether there is a machshava required, not a machshava required. If a tumma chamur, I don't need a machshava. So for tumma kala, I certainly don't need a machshava. That's the argument of Rav Yochanan Nuri. So amr lo lo im amar b'tumma chamur shekeinenu yoredes lekach. So the Chachamim say back to Rav Yochanan Nuri, so interesting. How did you make that kavachomer? From Tuma Chamura to Tuma Kala? You can't compare the two. By Tuma Chamura, eno yoredis lakach. Now, in a vague statement in terms of the nature of Tuma Chamura, we're coming back to that in a little bit. Tomer b'Tuma Kala sheken yoredis lakach, but Tuma Kala yoredis lakach. Okay, exactly what the counter argument of the Chachamim is, we're going to clarify a little bit better. Amr lahem tanagol shebiyavna tochich sheres lekach v'tumah shelo b'machshava. So the Rav Yochanan Nuri says, what about the tanagolas in Yavna? It's metamish shelo b'machshava. Amr lo misham raya kusam hayisham v'chishav ala achila. And the Chacham say to Rav Yochanan Ben Nuri, you're misinformed in that scenario. You think that bird died and automatically, immediately it received tumas ochlin? No. In Yavna there were kusim living in Yavna. And only because the decision was made that we're going to give this bird over to Kusim, then and only then is the bird going to be subject to Tumas Ochlin. Otherwise, it wouldn't be subject to Tumas Ochlin. Okay. What we have over here is a machlokas between the Tanakam and Rav Yochanan Nuri. When I have the carcass of a bird, and the question becomes, is it going to be subject to Tumas Ochlin? Does it require machshava? Does not require machshava? According to the Chachamim, it requires a machshava. There has to be a positive intent that we're going to give it to a consumer. Now again, the consumer base can't be Jews because it didn't receive a shechita; it's not kosher. But still, as long as we identify a consumer base and you articulate that we're going to give it to that consumer base, so then it's going to be considered a food subject to Tumas Ochlin. That's the position of the Tanakama. It requires machshava, and Rav Yochanan Nuri is making the argument based on a kavachomer. It does not require machshava, even if I have no intent of giving it to any consumer base. It's subject to Tumas Ochlin. That's the machlokas. The Gemara wants more context to this debate. Now the Gemara says, are we in the city? Because if we're in the city, so the assumption is that in the city it's a big population, densely packed. There are Jews and non-Jews. We're going to find a consumer in the city. And not only that, the Mishnah says so. The Mishnah, the Gemara quotes, Nivlas Behema Tahara, Bechol Makom, that when I have the nevela of a Behema Tahara, so in any location, and Nivlas of Tahara Vahachela Bekrachim, Ain't Srichim Lo Machshava Velo Hechsher. So in a Krach in a city does not require Machshava, does not require Hechsher. Because in a city, we're going to find a consumer. And so therefore, we don't have to have, we're not going to have to wait until somebody makes a declaration or decision. I wonder if we're going to find a consumer. In the city, we're going to find one. So, Ella Bikfarim. Okay, so the Gemara says, fine. So, the Mishnah that we quoted that started off our morning, it's a Braisa, but no, it's a Mishnah. The Mishnah that we start off with this morning is not talking about a krach, it's not talking about a city. So, it's talking about a kfar, it's talking about a village. The Gemara says, Umi Iklaman Damar Dolobai Machshava, in a village, so we're really not sure if we're going to find a consumer. Of course you need a machshav in the village. And who's ready to argue that point? Vatanan, the Gemara quotes another Mishnah. Nivlas behema tameya bechol makom nivlas of tar bekfarim tzricha machshava vein tzricha hechsher. So in the village you need a machshava. We don't know if we're going to find a consumer. And so therefore, in the village, you must positively identify a potential consumer. Then and only then is it going to be subject to Tumas Ochlin. So we're kind of stuck right now. We have this machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rav Yochanan Nuri in terms of whether or not the Nivlas Oftar requires a machshava, does not require a machshava. And the Gemara says, I'm lost. In the city, no machshava is required. In a village, everybody agrees that there needs to be a machshava. And we have to identify a consumer. So I'm Reb Ziri, Barachinin Olam Bikrach, Vigito Ma'asto, Asu Kikfar. So Reb Ziri Barachinin offers the following. We're talking about in the city. And you're right. Generally speaking, in the city, I don't need a machshava. I know we're going to find a consumer. Someone's going to eat it. It just happens to be that in this particular scenario, I mean, look at the Braisa. The Braisa is talking about a very specific case. It was a bird, but it fell into the gas and fell into the press. And as a result of that, it's not only is it just a carcass, which in of itself is not super appealing, but on top of that, it also fell into the press, makes it even less appealing. And so therefore, it was mius, became disgusting. And so therefore, in this particular scenario, it's going to have more of a kfar type, a kfar style halacha, meaning that we lost a lot of our consumer base. If it was just a nevela, we'll find somebody who's going to want to eat it. But it's a nevela and it was picked out of the gas, I'm not really sure if we're going to find somebody to eat it. So if we identify consumers, that's okay, fine. And that's the machlokas between the Tanakam and Rav Yochanan Nuri. Okay. So we start off this morning with a Mishnah. Machlokas whether or not the pigeon that fell into the press and it died and we took it out and it's a nevela. And is it also Tumas Ochlin? So according to the Tanakam, you need a machshava. According to Rav Yochanan Nuri, you do not need a machshava. Rav Yochanan Ben Nuri bolstered his position with a kal v'chomer. The Chachamim argued with this kal v'chomer. And then, just the context of, are we talking about in the city, or are we talking about in the village? Okay. What we're going to do now is we're going to go back to the original Mishnah that we started off with this morning. I'm Rav Yochanan Ben Nuri, kal v'chomer, imetam etam echamur, shalom b'machshava, lo tetam etam akala, shalom b'machshava. Amr lo, imamart betum echamur, shekein, eina yoredis lekach. And so we're just revisiting the Mishnah, and we're looking at the counter-argument of the Chachamim to Rav Yochanan Nuri. Rav Yochanan Nuri made a kava chomer. If I don't need a machshava for Tumah Chamura, I certainly don't need a machshava for Tumah Kala. And the Chachamim look at Rav Yochanan Nuri, and they say, and I'm quoting, what do you mean? You can't compare. Eina yoredes lekach. Okay, now, the words we can translate, but what does it mean? So, my eina yoredes lekach. What does that mean? So, amar av hachi kamrilei. So the Amoraim are now going to take attempts of trying to understand what did the Chachamim mean when they are disproving the Kav HaChomer of Rav Yochanan Nuri. So attempt number one is Rava. Am Rava Hachi Kamri Le. Lo, im amart betuma chamura, shekein eina ose kayotziba. Tomer betuma kala, she ose kayotziba. Let's take the following into consideration. By tuma chamura, every time there is a transmission of Tumah from Tumah Chamura. Tumah Chamura means an Avatumah. So what happens every single time there's a transmission? I know there's exceptions, but generally speaking, when there's a transmission, so the next item, is no longer an Avatumah. It's a Vlad. So as such, so generally speaking, let's say a Sheretz is an Avatumah, right? And Nevela is an Avatumah. We can go down the list. But it passes its Tumah onto another item, right? And now it could be Adam, could be Kalim, could be Ochlin, but the item now that receives the Tumah is a Vlada Tumah. It's a Rishon. At that point going forward, a Rishon is not the same as its Av. The Av can be Metame, Adam, Kalim, Ochlin, and a Vlad can only be Metame, Ochlin, and Mashkin, but not Adam the Kalim. So that's the Avatumah. But when it comes to the Vlad Tumah, when it comes to Ochlin, one food is Metame, another food. You know what that second food could do? That second food came in Matame, a third food. I understand there has to be, it's not as simple as I portrayed it, but that's basically the idea. So I can't compare Tumah Chamura to Tumah Kala. Tumah Chamura is a one-time transmission where once the recipient receives the Tumah, it can't behave like the parent Tumah. Masha'enke, when it comes to Ochlin and Avlada Tumah, Well, no, it can behave in the same manner. The recipient of the tumah can behave in the same manner as the parent of the source of its tumah, in that it can be matami another ochlin. So the Gemara says that's the reason why the two can't be compared. So Amalei Abaye says to Rava, you're right, but that's not a pircha on the kavachomer. Amalei Abaye called the kainhu. Well, if anything, that makes the argument even stronger. So in a really strange way, tama chamura is more meko, right? It took me a little while to really process this line of the Gemara. But it means tama chamura is more meko. It's limited. It's limited in the sense that tama chamura, once that transmission goes from the parent to the from the source to the recipient, that's it. You can't replicate that. And the kayotiba, I'm sorry, kol tekeinu, ma tuma chamur dekilo deino ose kayotiba, mitam shalom b'machshava, and yet even in its limited stage, in its limited state, I don't need a machshava, tuma kala de chamira. Now tuma kala, which is more chamur. Now chamur over here in this case means, it's more expansive in that, when I do a transmission from one tuma kala to another tuma kala, I can replicate. I can also do another transmission from the second to the third, and in certain areas in halacha from the third to the fourth. So it's more chamor in that regard. So if it's easier to transmit and I can replicate the transmission, so certainly I don't need a machshava. So your point is good, Abai says to Rava, but that doesn't disrupt the kavah chamor. If anything, it enhances the kavah chamor. So Allah
Merav. Is there a lower level than Tumakala?
It's just that tuma kala is easier to replicate.
Bottom, no?
Huh?
Tuma kala is the bottom of the tuma.
I understand that.
Where can you go? So obviously you can't go lower.
Right, but the Gemara's point is not a question of lower or higher. Quite the Gemara's point is that once you have this transmission, can that be repeated? By tuma chamura, it can't be repeated. Once you go from the av to the vlad, that's it. The vlad can't do what the av did. The av can be metame adam v'kelim. The Vlad cannot be Matame Adam Mikhailim, but that's not true when it comes to Tamakala. Whatever the source could do.
You can't, no place else to go.
No, but it could. No, but that's not true. It can go to another food.
Yeah, but for the same level.
Right. Okay. So Elam Rav Sheshes Hachi Kamar Lo Imamar B'Tuma Chamur Shekein and Tzricha Hechsher Tomer B'Tuma Kala Shetzricha Hechsher. So the Gemara says, okay. So I think this is what. Why the Chachamim are going to be arguing with the Kavah Chomer. You know, when it comes to Tuma Chamura, so it does not require Hechsher, right? For Nevela, for example.
Right.
So for it to be an Avatuma, it doesn't have to come into contact with a liquid. By virtue of the fact that it's an Avatuma, that's it. It's a source of Tuma. It does not require any Hechsher, does not require any preparation. When it comes to Tuma Kala, it requires Hechsher. So the Gemara says, so in that regard, that's why the two are not comparable. So the Gemara says, "Umitzricha hechsher v'atana." The Gemara says, "But wait one second. Keep in mind, we are discussing over here the carcass of a kosher bird, and it is an avatama, and we're also deliberating. Also, is it tumas ochlin? Now you know when it comes to the actual carcass of a bird. So for the avatama aspect of it, it doesn't require hechsher." But the truth of the matter is that for the Tumas Ochlin aspect of it, it also doesn't require Hechsher. How do I know that? Once again, here we go, back to Taharos. Shosha Dvarim, right, the Shosha Asar, right, it's 13. Shosha Asar Dvarim Namru B'Nivlas of Tahar Tzricha Machshava Ve'ina Matame Ela B'Beis Ablia. So the basics. It requires a Machshava. It is not Matame, it's only Matame when it's ingested. And in a tzricha hechsher, so the Gemara says it does not require hechsher. So the Gemara says nehi de hechsher sheres lo baye hechsher mayim baye. So the Gemara says, well, it doesn't require hechsher in that it doesn't need to come into contact with the sheres, but it needs to come into contact with a liquid, right? And the Gemara's response is no, that's not right. So mayshna hechsher sheres lo baye ked detan de beir avishmal hechsher mayim nami lo tibay ked detan de beir avishmal. And the Gemara says no, the nivlas of tahar, the carcass of a dead bird, does not require hechsher in any front. It doesn't need to come into contact with the sheretz. It doesn't need to come into contact with liquid. How do I know that? The Gemara has a drasha. The Tanda be Rav Yishmael calls there is a ruah sheir yizareya mazraim she'ein sof l'tamei tuma chamurat tzrichin hechsher av kol she'ein sof l'tamei tuma chamurat tzrichin hechsher. Here in this brisa, we are given the prototype of what food requires hechsher. Do you know what food requires hechsher? A food that can never be eligible to be a source of tuma. Any food that is eligible to become a source of tuma, by definition, does not require hechsher. Yatsa nivla sof tarsha sof l'tamei tuma chamur she'ein tzarech hechsher. And so therefore, Nivlas of Tahor, because it is a source of Tuma, so as Tumas Ochlin will never require Hechsher. So, and when we say never requires Hechsher, not Sheretz, not Mayim, meaning it is already now in a state of Tumas Ochlin, and it does not require the Hechsher. So, we're still struggling, meaning we know that Rav Yochanan Ben Ori tried to give a Kavachomer. We also know that the Chachamim say, yeah, but you can't make that Kavachomer. Because, and again, the words of the Chachamim are, it's Eino Yoredes Lakach. What does that mean? So, Ela Amarava, so the Gemara finally comes around. V'itemra Papa Shum Tama Chamura Ba'olam Shum Tama Kala Ba'olam. And so, as an explanation, look, we're just putting everything in its categories. And as Rashi writes over here, what do you mean categories? Rashi is towards the top of the Amud. Fourth narrow line down. Din hu shematame b'lamachshava shlomatzina shumtama sheshmatama chamur shetei tzricha hechsher. Look, as a category, when I have an avatama, it doesn't require hechsher, meaning because that's the very nature of an avatama. It's a source of tama, and it doesn't need preparation to become a source of tama. By virtue of the fact that it's an avatama, that in of itself creates tama. Tomer b'tama kala de ochlin shalfa pishizu ein tzricha hechsher. Now, when it comes to ochlin, I know in this case of the bird that is also an avatama, so I know in this case it doesn't require hechsher. But don't look at it on a case-by-case basis. Let's just talk about it categorically. Categorically, when it comes to a food categorically requires hechsher. Hari kol ochlin, Rashi writes, yesh aleim shum tuma, kala, v'tzrichin hechsher, hilka chachinami bayim achshava. And so therefore, when it comes to food, the category of food, it requires hechsher. Therefore, it requires machshava. Okay. That is the Gemara's final response in terms of why the Chachamim do not like the Kavachomer of Rav Yochanan Ben Nuri. And fine. And so, let's continue. Okay, let's go back to what we learned yesterday. Go back to yesterday's daf. Go back to the bottom of Nun Amud Aleph. I know we're going back some time, but if I can remind all of us. Amar Rabba Barachan Amar Rav Yochanan Ulshin. If let's say we have some sort of endives, whatever it is, shezaron mitchila lebehema v'nimar chaleim la'adam, planted originally for animals, and then afterwards we changed our mind and we said, nah, you know what? No. When can we make that status change? So Rav Yochanan said in yesterday's daf, remember? So tzricha machshava lechishayit l'shu. So the only time that we can make a status change is only after we detach it from the ground. When it's grounded, it's always going to stay with its original intention. And if it was originally intended to be planted for animal consumption, I can only make a status change after it's detached from the ground. While it's grounded, literally, so then it remains with its original machshava. That was Rav Yochanan, and we discussed this in detail in yesterday's daf. The Gemara is going all the way back there. Amar Rava. So Rava says, Umod Rav Yochanan, Linyan Maisa de Machshavas Chibur Shema Machshava. Now, Rav Yochanan told us that when it comes to the question of Tumas Ochlin, status change can only occur after I detach the growth from the ground. But in terms of Maiser, we can make status changes even while it's grounded, and Rav Yochanan will agree that that's so. Amar Rava Mina Minala Didnan. Now, the Gemara wants to know, okay, that's great. Where's the source of this? So, we're going to go through a number of Mishnayos together. We are learning now a Mishnah in Maisros. Hasia, v'ha'ezo, v'ha'kornish, shebechatrim, hayu nishmarim chayavim. So, various growths. All right, the ezov, the only thing I recognize over here as something, at least I know, I'm familiar with that growth. What exactly it is, it's in English, it's described as a hyssop. It doesn't do anything for me. Anyway, these are all various growths. And in the chatzer, as long as it's nishmar, it's going to be chayiv in shumas ha'maisros. That's the Mishnah. Now, hechidam, ilem et dezarina mitchila adam. So the Gemara says, now, obviously the Mishnah is trying to teach us a chiddush. if I took these particular vegetables, vegetations, whatever they are, and I planted them for human consumption, I need a Mishnah in Maestros to teach me that it's Chayiv and Shumas and Maestros? I mean, that's obvious. So Tzricha L'Memar, Elalav D'Zarina Mitzchila L'Behema V'Ktanim Hayu Nishmarim Chayavim. Oh, so now we're saying a Pshat in the Mishnah, and it's going to support what we've been saying. We planted originally for animals to eat it. And then afterwards, we all changed our mind. Even while it's still in the ground, that is going to be considered now a change of designation. It's no longer animal vegetation. It's now human vegetation. And it's going to be subject to Shumas and Maestros, even though the Machshava was, while the produce was still grounded. That is not the Pshat in the Mishnah. Now, it's not clear that that's the Pshat in the Mishnah, but the Gemara is certainly suggesting. So Rav Ashi says, I'll tell you what, I'll say a different pshat in the Mishnah. What the pshat in the Mishnah over there is that we didn't plant anything. In other words, it grew wild. The azov and these other vegetables, they grew wild in the garden. So wild growth in the garden, subject to trimmers and maestros, yes or no? That's what the Mishnah is dealing with. And the Mishnah is teaching us that as long as it's nishmar, as long as there's a fence around and it's under somebody's ownership and protection, it's chayv and shumas and maisos. That's what the Mishnah is teaching us. Masav Rav Ashi, the Gemara says, okay, let's consider the following. Our Mishnah, going back to yesterday's daf, said that if something is subject to maisos, it's going to be metam to masochlin. Good, right? The two factors. And we know that anything that's subject to Meiser, by definition, is going to be to Masochlin. Which, if you think about it, makes perfect sense. If something's subject to Meiser, it's a food that we're going to eat. And therefore, it's subject to Masochlin. However, the Gemara now points out, V'im Isa, Ha'ika Hani Dekach Hayavim Ma'iser V'im Matam to Masochlin. So the Gemara says, okay, but we've just discovered something that breaks the rule of the Mishnah, haven't we? Meaning something that was planted in the ground originally for animals, and then we changed our mind while it's still connected to the ground. So, what's the halacha in terms of Tumas Ochlin? We'll go back to what we learned yesterday. That change doesn't occur. What's its status regarding Meiser? It's now considered Ochlin regarding Meiser. So, we just discovered something that is going to be subject to Meiser, but not going to be subject to Tumas Ochlin. Okay, and that would break the rule of the Mishnah. Amareva hachikamar called minshachay b'maisa metam tamas ochlin. So the Gemara says, break the rule of the Mishnah. What are you talking about? No, it's not breaking the rule of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is just talking about categories. Meaning, yeah, you want to come up with a case in which we're going to find something which is subject to maisa but not subject to tamas ochlin. Okay, you can come up with a case. But if we're going food by food, category by category, if the food is the type of food which is subject to Meiser, it's going to be subject to Tumas Ochlin. That's what the Mishnah means. Hachinami Mesarbe Mitzkani Seif. And the Gemara says, and of course, this is the correct shot in the Mishnah. Because consider, we're going to be learning a little bit later this morning. Anything that's subject to the mitzvah of Reishis Hagez, giving its first shearings over to the Kohen, is going to be subject to Matanos. That when you end up shechting the animal, so parts of the animal, three parts of the animal are going to go to the Kohen. This is what's called Matanos. I'll discuss it in better detail a little bit later this morning. V'im Isa ha'ika trefa dechayavas breishas agez ve'enu chayavas b'matanos. Now, clearly we're talking about categories, because if we talked about a single case, consider now the halach of trefa. Trefa, if my sheep is a trefa, is there a mitzvah breishas agez? Sure. In other words, that's just the wool that we're shearing off. Is there going to be a requirement of matanos? No. Because the whole purpose of matanos is for the Kohen to eat it. If it's a trefa, the Kohen can't eat it. So then there's no matanos. So if we talked about a case-by-case basis, I could upset the rule of the Mishnah in the case of a trefa. So Am Ravina Hamani Rabbi Shimoni Dinan Rabbi Shimon Potos a trefa Mirishas Hagez. So Ravina says, if that's your entire proof, we could argue. Meaning maybe the author of the Mishnah, and later this morning, is going like Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says that a trefa is in fact exempt from Reishis Hagez. So it could very well be that we are going case by case, and the Mishnah later on is not necessarily going to be a challenge. I'm Rav Shimon bar Ashi Tashma, Mafkir Karmo, Vishkim Baboker Bitzro. Consider now the following Mishnah. The person has a vineyard, and He's trying to do some fancy footwork in terms of tax loophole. And what he wants to do is not be obligated in all the chiyuvim of Trumas HaMaisros. And so what does he do? He declares his field ownerless. Now we know the halacha is that a field that does not have an owner is not chayv in Trumas HaMaisros. Okay. Which in of itself, by the way, is really intuitive. Who's going to give the Trumas HaMaisros if there is no owner? But over here, however, this person is clearly doing this not because he's really altruistically giving away his property. It's because he's just trying to get out of chiyuv of Trumas HaMaisros. And the Mishnah, by the way, is not condoning the action. It's just talking about the effectiveness of the action. Hamafkir's karma, so he declares his vineyard ownerless the night earlier. And then the next morning he gets up really early. Oh, look at that. Who knew it was going to be there? Shocking. V'hishkin baboker u'bitzro. And the next morning now he's harvesting his vineyard. So chay beperdeva olos v'shichu v'peya. So he's going to be a chayiv in many of the matnos aniyim, even though it's hefker. Now, why that should be? So I'm not going to go through the time right now, but it's really important. Look at the Rashi. Rashi gives us the drushes of why that's the case. But for now, just to say it succinctly, it's still going to be chayiv in many of the matnos aniyim upatim and a meiser, but he does not have to give meiser from it. V'hanan tanan kol shechay bepeya chay b'meisros. So here we came up with a case scenario where you have something which is chayiv in peya, but not chayiv in maisros. And meanwhile, the Mishnah tells us that anything that's chayiv in peya, by definition, is going to be chayiv in maisros. So, elav shmamina, min ketani shmamina. So the Gemara says, okay. So we can now say it really comfortably. All right? With the Mishnah of the Reishis Hagez and the Matnos Kahuna, we didn't say it so comfortably, but now we're saying comfortably. The Mishnah is not talking on a case-by-case basis. The Mishnah is just simply saying categorically, if there's a food that's chayv in peya, then it's going to be chayv in maestros. If there's an animal that's chayv in reishis hagez, then it's going to be chayv in matanos. But we're not talking about case-by-case basis. Tanan Hasam, the Gemara quotes a Mishnah over there in peya. Morim chacham l'Rabbi Kiva b'zareh sheves. O chardal. B'shtayim v'shoshim mekam v'shanosim peya mekol echa v'echad. I'm not going to go through the Rashi right now. I encourage you to see the Rashi, the bottom of the Amud. Rashi gives us the context of the Chachamim are agreeing to Rabbi Kiva. That means that they're disagreeing earlier. See Rashi where he discusses what was the previous disagreement. But for our purposes right now, for the sake of brevity, I'm just going to read the Mishnah as we have it, because really we're making a singular point, and it's not connected to the previous part of the Mishnah. We're talking here about Sheves. I think the English translation of Sheves is dill. I may be right. Okay. Dill, mustard, and it was planted in two or three places out in the field. So peya is required from every one of those places. Now, v'ha Sheves de'mechai be'peya, u'mechai be'meiser. Now, when it comes to dill, so it is chayv in peya, it's also chayv in meiser. Ditnan. Kol shechay be'peya, chayv be'meiser. So, again, go back to the Mishnah that we learned earlier. If you have a type of food that's chayv in peya, it's for sure going to be chayv in meiser. So far, so good. Now, midechayv in meiser metame tomas ochlin. Now, if it's going to be subject to meiser, so that means it's a food and subject to tomas ochlin, right? It's a great logic ladder. Meaning, once you know all the rules, so then all we're just doing is plugging it in. So sheves is still is chayv in peya, therefore it's chayv in meiser, therefore it's going to be subject to tomas ochlin, based on all the steps that we had in the Mishnayos that brought us to this point. So ama kolmila da'avi l'taima mitami tomas ochlin da'i sheves l'taima avidi. So the Gemara says, so now, after constructing this argument, it's a sound argument, so now what comes out is that we're talking about dill. Now dill is a spice, it's a condiment. And you don't eat the dill in of itself. Is that eligible to become tomas ochlin? Well, after having gone through all the steps of these Mishnayos, the answer is yes. Definitively, yes. The problem is a reminhu. Problem is, of course, the Mishnah in Uksin. I say, of course. Right? The problem is the Mishnah in Uksin. Hakosht v'hachimum, v'roshe b'samim, v'hatia, v'hachiltis, v'alpilpilin, v'chalas hareya. Charya? Okay. Sorry. Pronunciation probably is awful. Okay. Nitchin b'kesav ma'itzer v'ein matam and tomas ochlin. Divrei Rabbi Kiva. So Rabbi Kiva takes the position that these are all different types of spices. Okay, and you'll forgive me, I'm not going to translate all of them, so or any of them for that matter, but they're all different types of spices. And according to Rabbi Akiva, you can purchase them with the Meister Sheni money, but they're not subject to Tumas Ochlin. I'm a Rabbi Yochum and Nuri. So Rabbi Yochum and Nuri says, wait one second. How did you split the difference? In Nichem, because of Meister, Mimnei Ma, Ein Metamim, Tumas Ochlin. Vein Metamim, Vein Einan Metamim, Avheim Lo Yichlu, because of Meister. Is it a food or isn't it a food? Okay, it's really that simple. Meaning, if it's a food, so then you could purchase, you could take your Meister, your Kesef, sorry, your Meister Sheni money, and you could buy it in Yerushalayim, because the Torah says that you could take your Meister Sheni money and buy with it B'chol Avas Nafshecha, whatever food you want. So if it's a food for Meister Sheni money, so then it's subject to Tumas Ochlin. And if it's not subject to Tumas Ochlin, so then you can't buy it as a food with your Meister Sheni money. Either pick one or the other. Now it's a very sound argument of Rav Yochanan Menuri. In fact, it's so sound. I'm Rav Yochanan Menuri. Nimnu v'gamru shalom nichem b'ketzav ma'aser ve'im etam etam esochlen. And Rav Yochanan Menuri says that we had a vote, and here Rabbi Akiva's position was ruled out, meaning the consensus was the majority was it's not a food, so it's not going to be a food for Tumas Ochlin, and it's not going to be a food for the purchasing of to be able to be purchased with Meister Sheni money. Okay. And what's the problem with that? What did we just learn together? Spices are not subject to Tumas Ochlin. Obviously, it enhances the flavor of the food that we eat, but it's not considered an ochel in of itself. Now we go back to the dill. The problem becomes now the dill. And again, how do I know that by dill, it's subject to Tumas Ochlin? So again, I'm just going to go over the logic ladder one more time. Because we know the Mishnah in Peah tells us it's subject to Peah. We know based on our Mishnah, if something subject to Peah is subject to Meister Sheni. I also know that if something is subject to Meister Sheni, it's subject to Tumas Ochlin. Okay, so if I put all those logical points together, so now we have a kasha, right? So dill is subject to Tumas Ochlin. But meanwhile, the Mishnah Uksin tells us that spices are not subject to Tumas Ochlin. So it requires a resolution. The Gemara here gives a definitive resolution. It's not a discussion. The Gemara gives the answer. So we're talking about the dill that's used for kamach. Kamach is a dip.
Kutach.
You're right. Kutach, says Rashi. Right. Koshinos of nosanos of kutach. Viikaro. Now I'm reading the Rashi with the Bach. Right. Viikaro sheves ubomat bilin kol. So really what we're doing over here is that it's not an enhancement of the kutach. It is the kutach. In this particular dish and in the way we're using the dill, it actually is part and parcel of the kutach. So, and that's, under those circumstances, it's a food. So, kitanya hi b'shevas asur l'kamach. Amar avashi amrisa l'shmaita kamidir av kahana. Lo tem b'shevas asur l'kamach hastam l'kadera. Elastam shevas l'kamach asuya. And what do we normally do with dill? What's the default position by dill? Is it for kutach and therefore it's a food? Is it just simply a condiment to enhance the flavor of other foods? So he says stam shevas l'kamach. It's generally presumed the default usage of the dill is for kutach. How do I know that? A Mishnah did not a shevas mishnas no tam bekadera. Ein ba mishum truma ve'ein matam tumas ochlen ha'ad shelonit natam bekedera yesh ba mishum truma o matam tumas ochlen. Only when I actually use it as a spice, then does it have the status of a spice. Otherwise, it qualifies as a food. V'isakadach stam lekedera kilonit natam stam lekedera alav shmamina stam lekamach asui shmamina. You just read the Mishnah. It's pretty simple pshat in the Mishnah. When I put it into the pot to enhance the taste of other foods, then it qualifies as a spice, which means that the default setting is that it does not qualify. I'm sorry, it's not a spice, but it's a food in of itself. Okay, so a short discussion on dill. Okay, the Mishnah. Kol shechai bereishis ages chai b'matanz v'yesh chai b'matanz v'ena chai bereishis ages. Okay, the Mishnah over here teaches us regarding animals and its requirement of reishis ages and matanos. Quickly. Reishis ages, sheep. So the halacha is that when you have a certain number of sheep and you have shorn a certain amount of the wool off this number of sheep. I'm sorry about being vague with the numbers, right? The Mishnayos at the end of Chulin has a debate in terms of how many sheep we're talking about. The Mishnah says two or five, machlokes b'chamei and b'selel. respectively. The Gemara also has another position where it's four sheep. So I'll just leave it vague right now. And how much wool do you need to shear off the sheep? Again, see the Mishnah at the end of Chulin for that discussion. Right now, I'll just say it simply. You have sheep, a certain number, and you shear off a certain amount of the sheep. So this is what the requirement is, ratios, I guess. A percentage of it goes over to the Kohen. Right? The Gemara in Chulin over there says a 60th. Fine. And then, if it is chayiv in ratios, I guess, it's for sure going to be chayiv in matanos. When you shecht the sheep, so, zroa l'chayiv ekeva, the right foreleg, that's the zroa. L'chaye is the, literally the jaw of the animal, right? Exactly how much does it cover? The end of the 11th? 10th. Okay, sorry. One of the last prakim in Chulin discusses exactly what the anatomy of how much of the jaw you have to give. And then also the keva. Keva is the fourth stomach of the animal. So all these have to be given to the Kohen of every animal. So if it's chayv and reishis against, that means it's a sheep. And when you shecht it, you have to give the matanos over to the Kohen. However, the opposite's not true, because matanos apply to all kosher animals, all kosher domesticated animals. And so that means, obviously, that you shecht a cow. There's no reishis against by a cow, but of course there's matanos by a cow. Okay, good. And then Mishnah continues, kol sheyesh lo bir, yesh lo shvias. V'yesh yesh lo shvias v'ein lo bir. Now, if there is a beer requirement means that when the produce is no longer out in the field during the Shemitah year, so I must, now I'm going to use the word, but loosely, you must destroy any of the produce up until that point in time. This is what's called beer perishvias. Now, exactly what beer means, it's a major machlokus amongst the Rishonim, but for now, let's just simply say destruction, even though that's not precise, or it's not agreed to by everybody. So if it's subject to beer, so it's going to be subject to Kedusha Shvias. There are things, however, that Yeshlo Shvias, it has Kedusha Shvias, and meanwhile, it is not going to be subject to beer. Now, when we talk about Kedusha Shvias, what we mean is as follows. There's a requirement to be mafkirit, meaning you have to declare it ownerless, and you can't make commercial activity with it. That is when it has Kedusha Shvias. But not everything with Kedusha Shvias is going to be subject to beer. Now, Kigon, immediately we go right to the Gemara. Ale haluf shote hadandana yeshlam lo shvias vein lo beer. So they're subject to shvias, but they're not going to be subject to beer. Okay. And the reason why is because they don't have seasons. And so they're never going to... The only produce of shvias that require beer is where the season comes to an end. But these things are not seasonal.
It's not like figs.
Yeah. Iker haluf shota v'iker hanandana dechiv shebaratzecha tiyeh kol tvuasecha l'chol kol zman shechaya ocholos minasada atam ha'achilo v'emtecha bebayis kala l'chaya minasada kala l'vemtecha shebebayis v'hani lo kaluhu. And the Gemara spells it out. The Gemara says it. It's because these things don't have a season. They don't have a seasonal end to them. And so therefore, they are subject to Kedusha Shvias. Again, that means that they have to be declared hefker, and you can't make commercial activity out of them. But in terms of destroying them, a shas beer, there's no shas beer, simply because there is no season where it comes to an end. Okay, I know we ran out of time, but I'm just going to quickly run through the next mission, the next Gemara. It's pretty straightforward. The Mishnah here tells us the rule regarding the interplay between fins and scales of a fish. Kosher fish has fins and scales. The Torah says, kol sheyesh lo snapir v'kaskesis. And so the Mishnah here tells us that here's the rule when it comes to fish. If it's got scales, it's going to have fins. V'yesh lo snapir v'yesh lo kaskesis. But there are fish that have fins but do not have scales. And just, you know, run through the aquariums in your mind. And you can write the shark. And many fish out there have fins but don't have scales. Kol sheyesh lo karnayim yesh lo talafim, v'yesh lo talafim v'ein lo karnayim. Right? If it has horns, it's going to have hooves. But there are animals that have hooves but do not have horns. Now, kol sheyesh lo kaskeses dag tahor, yesh sheyesh lo snapir v'ein lo kaskeses dag tameh. So the Gemara says, okay, And so, once I know the rule of the Mishnah, so it comes out now as follows. If it has scales, it's going to have fins, and therefore it's kosher. But if it doesn't have scales, it could have fins. Okay. Now, michti, anan akaskasa samchinan. Snapir de kasa rechman alamali. Gemara asks such a wonderful question. If every fish that has scales, by definition, is going to have fins, so then the Torah could just simply say, hey, you want to know, you want a kosher fish?
Scales.
And that's it. And why would the Torah then have to go on and also mention fins? It is now perfectly superfluous. Ilo kasa rechman a snapir hava amina mai kaskasa dechziv. Snapir. V'afilu dag tamei. So kasa rechman a snapir v'kaskases. So the Gemara says it's for definitional purposes. If the Torah would have just simply said the word kaskases, I don't know what that is necessarily. And I could have misinterpreted the Torah to mean to say that kaskases is referring to the fins. So the Gemara says, V'ashad dekas rechman a snapir v'kaskases. Minalam des kaskases levushahu. So the Gemara says, so the Torah says snapir v'kaskases. Snapir or fins? Okay, so kaskases. So if it's not the fins, what are they? There's some sort of scaling, right? I know I'm using a word similar to scales. There's some sort of scaling on the fish. Some sort of levush on the fish. How do I know that? Tichsiv. So we have other psukim that speak to this idea. V'siryon v'keskesim hu levush. Right? The armor worn by a soldier. The Navi describes it as siryon keskesim. Okay, it's fine. So some sort of armor, some sort of protective layer. So the Gemara says, okay, so we know what the kaskeses means. We have psukim in Navi that tells us what it means. So Amar Rabbi Abba, v'chein tan debei Rabbi Shmuel, yagdil Torah v'yadir. To which the Gemara says, okay, yagdil Torah v'yadir. You're right. We would have known it. But at the same time, however, sometimes the Torah wants to, so to say, give us more, so that we are in a position where we have the ability to grow, to become better. And so the Torah over here gives us words which enachinami would be somewhat extra, but yagdol Torah v'yadir. It helps us grow. Okay, Adkan, today we covered the first discussion, a lengthy discussion, the Gemara of Machshava when it comes to Nivlas of Tahor. Is there a Machshava requirement? Is there no Machshava requirement on the Tumas Ochlin front of the carcass of the bird? Machlokes between the Tanakhama and Rav Yochum and Nuri. Rav Yochum and Nuri gave a Kavachomer. Tanakhama didn't like the Kavachomer. And a ensuing discussion in the Gemara, why did the Chachamim reject the Kavachomer of Rav Yochum and Nuri? In terms of Machshava, so we learned that when a food is grounded and it didn't have Tumas Ochlin, meaning let's say we planted it for animals, when can I change the designation? In yesterday's daf, we learned only after you detach it from the ground. In terms of meiser, we could change the designation even while it's attached to the ground. Right? That was the Rava in the middle of the Amud Aleph of today's daf. Okay. Then dill discussion in dill. Is it a spice or is it a food? The answer is yes. right. Okay, and it depends. It depends whether it's for if I'm putting in the kutach or if I'm actually using it as a condiment. Default, it's a food. That's the default setting of the dill. And then we went over Reishis Hagez versus the Chiv of Matanos. We went over beer versus Shvius, Kedusha Shvius, and the requirement of beer. And finally, we went over Snapir and Kaskeses, the fins and scales of a fish, and hooves and horns of an animal. And again, which is the primary, which is the secondary factor.